This is America Weekend, and I am Paul Harris. That music was used to launch MTV in the early 80s, the first time there had been a full-time channel devoted to music videos around the clock. But just like radio had DJs, MTV had VJs, and there were five of them at the start. Martha Quinn, Mark Goodman, Triple J, J.J. Jackson, Alan Hunter, and my next guest, Nina Blackwood. J.J. Jackson's no longer around, but the four surviving VJs have written a book about those early days of MTV. It's called VJs, The Unplugged Adventures of MTV's First Wave. And here to talk about it is Nina Blackwood. Hi, Nina. Welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you, Paul, very much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Hey, if we go back to August 1st, 1981, when MTV launched and you and the others became our first VJs, you were not available in New York City where you were doing MTV. I'm curious, since you couldn't hear anything about it from people in your own town, when did you first realize that people were watching you?
Well, cable really wasn't even in Manhattan, and our studios were in New York City. So we had to take, they rented a bunch of buses to take us over to New Jersey to watch the launch in some funky club. But I would say when they sent us out on the road for personal appearances, and we all pretty much had the same experience of mine was in San Antonio, being driven to the mall for a personal appearance, you know, signing autographs and all that. Get to the mall, and there's a line wrapped around the whole place, and I, you know, say to the handler, I said, well, who's here? And they said, you. I said, drive around the parking lot. I wasn't ready. So there were hundreds of people standing in line going, I guess this thing has taken off.
Pretty cool. And then how long did it take before you started getting similar reaction from musicians whose videos you were playing or those who wanted you to play theirs?
Similar reactions meaning?
Meaning enthusiasm for the channel.
Well, you know, it depended on the artist. It took a while for some of the more established artists, and the first one that's coming to mind is Bruce Springsteen, to embrace video. He was kind of reluctant to do videos, but then you have artists like Rod Stewart, who had videos before MTV was even on, and then you had younger artists, I don't mean by age younger, newer artists, that's a better term, newer artists, like Duran Duran, who basically their career is synonymous with the advent of music video, that entirely embraced it, or Cyndi Lauper, and then, of course, Madonna, who did not know the music world without video, and, making videos. So, you know, it really depended on the artist. But I would say about 2 years into it, it was across the board that all artists realize the relevance of MTV and that, you know, to get record sales, they had to have a video, bottom line.
But in those earliest days, you were playing a lot of British bands. I remember Flock of Seagulls, Duran Duran, who you mentioned. Is it true that you had to play them because there weren't enough available music videos by American rock and rollers, that they just weren't hip to the technology yet?
Absolutely. It wasn't so much the, well, you could call it technology, but yeah, music videos actually began in Europe and England. They were used as promotional tools within the industry. And that's why John Lack and Bob Pittman kind of got this light bulb that went on and saw, there are these videos. What about having, you know, a channel that plays them, like a radio station, but with videos? So actually that was, those videos, those European videos, were the direct inspiration for MTV. So, yes, there were more groups from overseas that had videos, so consequently, that's what we were playing.
Yep.
Because there was more product.
Of course, one of the biggest stars in MTV history was Michael Jackson, but in the early days, MTV didn't play it, and it was kind of weird because at the time MTV debuted, I was working in what we used to call album-oriented rock radio, which I know AOR, you're familiar with.
Right.
Yeah, and AOR was kind of the format of MTV as well, and we would never have played any Michael Jackson songs right up until the point where Eddie Van Halen did the guitar solo on Beat It, and then our program director said, let's put this on and see what the reaction is, but keep telling them it's an Eddie Van Halen record because that will carry more weight with the audience. So it was very, very tough for Michael Jackson to get onto rock radio, and it must have been even harder to get onto rock TV in the form of MTV.
Yeah, it was, and I'm glad that you understand the AOR aspect of it because, you know, early on we were accused of being racist. And no, that wasn't the case, because if you're talking black and white, we were playing Phil Lynott of Thin Lizzy. You know, we were playing Joan Armatrading, John Butcher Access, you know, on and on and on. So it wasn't a black and white issue. It was strictly musical format. And, I mean, if Hendrix had been still alive, we would have been playing Hendrix.
Right.
You know, but the fact is that there weren't a lot of black artists that were playing, you know, rock music. So that was what it was. And I used to kind of get upset. I'm going like, look, man, we're not racist. That's what it is. It was, and then Michael Jackson comes along and his record, I mean, there's a whole thing that happened between the record company and MTV. And finally, when Michael Jackson was on, the direction of MTV also opened up to embrace more of a pop format.
In radio terms, you went from AOR to Top 40.
Added the pop.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
I said in radio terms, you went from AOR to Top 40.
Kind of, sort of. We were a little bit broader than Top 40. But we weren't as restricted. But let's put it this way. We added Top 40.
The book is called VJ, The Unplugged Adventures of MTV's First Wave. I'm curious if you read any of the adventures from Mark and Alan and Martha and the late J.J. Jackson in this book that you hadn't already known. Anything surprise you?
That was the funny thing. All of us... there were some things in there, and we thought we knew each other pretty doggone well. I mean, we're friends.
Yep.
And we're family. We're beyond friends. We're family. And all of us went, really? I didn't know that happened. Or, is that what you thought of me? Wow. Oh, okay. I mean, there was one part that I remember reading, the three others, Mark, Martha, and Alan, we're describing some period of time at MTV, and I'm reading this, you know, in the manuscript part. This is before the book was finished.
Yep.
Was the first draft. And I'm going, did I work at the same channel? You know, because my perception was entirely different, you know, but in this one particular scenario. So, yeah. So it was kind of fun for us as well.
I've also got to ask you one other inside baseball question about Kurt Loder. Because the time MTV came out, Rolling Stone was the rock magazine/newspaper. Everybody read it. And he wrote scathing reviews of MTV. Absolutely hated the channel, hated the VJs, hated everything about it. And then he turned around and took a job and stayed at the network for over a decade. How did that make you feel?
How do you spell hypocrite? You know, I mean, again, and this comes up quite a lot, and I harbor no ill will towards Kurt at all, because I've read Rolling Stone since it first started.
Yep.
And I respect writers and journalists that work for that magazine, but I thought, you know, he was very off track and unfair to us. And then to turn around and work for the station that he spent years slamming was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, how, you know, at least issue an apology, you know? You You know what I mean.
Absolutely. Nina, pleasure talking to you. Thanks for your time today.
Well, I appreciate it, Paul. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The book is called VJ, The Unplugged Adventures of MTV's First Wave, and that is one of the first VJs in history. Nina Blackwood here with Paul Harris on America Weekend.